Well, congratulations on Little Saigon. I see that St. Martin's is doing a bang-up job with a publicity campaign, an advertising campaign.
Yeah, they tour. Are.
What's all that like?
It's well, so far, so good. I'm 1 week into a four-week tour. This is my first stop on the East Coast, so I'm holding out okay, a little jet-lagged, but, you know, so far, so good.
Are they paying the freight, or do you have to pay your own way?
They are paying the freight on me, yeah.
First class?
Part first class and part regular business coach.
Mm-hmm. The top hotels, of course, the Helmsley Palace?
Not quite. I'm at the, where am I, Intercontinental. It's a pretty nice place.
Well, you know? St. Martin's is a big house and 900 books a year. They ought to spring for something like that.
Mm-hmm. They're taking good care of me, for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's go back a little bit, and let me ask a couple of questions about so you're a Californian, huh?
Yeah, I am. Native born.
Orange County.
Born in Los Angeles and moved to Orange County when I was 5.
What is the proximity to Los Angeles? Orange County, what is that? What is its proximity?
Well, they border. So where I live to L.A. proper is 40 miles.
Uh-huh.
It's an hour drive.
Where'd you go to school?
I grew up in Tustin, which is a little suburban town south of L.A., about 40 miles, and I went to public schools there. And then on to Orange Coast College, which is a two-year junior college, and then 2 years at UC Irvine, where I got an English degree in 1976.
Did you grow up in a literary household?
Not really. I grew up in kind of a verbal household. My dad is a great talker and spinner of yarns, and so is my mother. And reading was encouraged in the house, though, as opposed to television. And we had a fairly good library that I was always encouraged to use. So I read my Twain and Poe and Jack London at a fairly early age, in lieu of Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm. Did you have some idea at an early age that you would be writing?
Well, I really didn't, Don. Although I was writing, it was funny. I was writing constantly as a kid and more into adolescence. Poems to my girlfriends, diary for myself, a story here and there. So I wrote a lot through high school and through college, but the actual idea of becoming a writer didn't strike me until after college. And I traveled a little bit, and I realized suddenly that that's what I'd wanted to do, and that kind of was secretly what I'd been preparing myself to do for quite a long time.
What did you do with his English degree after you graduated?
Well, what I could think of, the best thing I could think of doing was getting a newspaper reporting job, because I wanted to write professionally, and I figured that was a logical place to start. So it took a long time. It took almost a year to get a job. Those were the Woodward and Bernstein years, and all the hot shots out of J school were getting the jobs on the papers. And, lowly English major, I was kind of down on the list. But I got a job finally as a movie reviewer for $10 a review once a week on a weekly paper, and a free movie pass. And I think, short of being a novelist, that was the best job I ever had.
And what happened after that?
I was hired full-time onto that paper about a month or two later. The editor liked me, and she put me under her, rewrites and school board. And, I graduated into City Hall and the cop beat and did a lot of feature writing also. I covered the arts and the theater and literature.
I suspect a journalism background is probably a good thing for a writer.
In many respects. I think so.
Although the writing style, you can't really compare journalism to creative writing, but the background, covering courts, accidents, things like that, was that helpful?
Yeah, really helpful, and I think it still is. Coming out of college, I was fairly sheltered and probably kind of introspective, like a lot of English majors are. And getting a job on the paper gave me a real dose of the machinery of civics. How the city government works. How the balance of power between the Chamber of Commerce and City Hall and the press, and it was a nice little microcosm of how the country works in a lot of ways, I think, and a lot of good exposure to different things, school board, cops, arts, and being a reporter makes you get out there, and you can't be shy. You have to be ready to stick your face into somebody else's and ask questions and write the answers down, and that's good. That's good training in research, and I certainly called upon some of those skills for Little Saigon.
I think I read in some of the publicity material that you graduated to being a technical writer.
Mm-hmm.
What was that about?
Well, I just thought that the reporting was just really hard work, and it wore me down after a while. I was working full-time as a newspaper reporter, writing my first novel, Laguna Heat, at night and on the weekends. And being a reporter is hard work, physically and mentally, so I just finally gave up and went for something easier. Technical writing was something that the hours were steadier, the pay was a little better, and you could kind of leave it at the office. It didn't follow me around.
Sounds boring, though.
It was kind of boring. In a way, it's interesting, though. We worked on the infamous Sergeant York project. I don't know if you remember that, but it was a highly touted, highly computerized, ultra-high-tech anti-aircraft tank that didn't work from day one, and everybody in the company knew it. And Caspar Weinberger, the Secretary of Defense, canceled the project, you know, front page news in 1985. And it was a little boring to work on, but an interesting look again at the mechanics of the procurement industry, military industrial complex. There's a great novel there somewhere. I don't know if I'm the one to write it.
What does a technical writer do?
In my case, we had to translate technical material down to seventh grade reading level, which was the target reading level for the combat troops who were going to be using this weapon. And what that boils down to is taking technical language and trying to make it readable for seventh grade level.
So you were writing an instruction manual?
Yeah, instruction, repair, and operation, a whole bit, 47-something volumes.
Well, yeah, what huge. Happens when a project like that is finished? Do they give you another assignment? Or?
They gave us walking papers. So I think 1,500 of us walked out of there a couple days later with our 2 weeks severance pay or whatever it was. It was just a layoff.
And the project stopped.
Right, complete layoff. They kept a cleanup team, which ironically here exactly 3 years later is still cleaning up the budgetary and paperwork mess behind that project. It's still there. They're cleaning things up.
So while you were working as a technical writer, you were also working on Laguna Beach, this novel. Tell me how this book came about.
Laguna Heat was a novel that I started in 1979 when I moved to Laguna Beach. It was the second book I started working on. I had a novel in the closet that I never showed anyone. But Laguna Heat I started in on, inspired by the city because it's a beautiful place. And it seemed to me like a good exercise in structure and plotting, because I'm not particularly a strong plotter and storyteller sometimes. So I figured if I could teach myself to write a basic A to B to C detective yarn, you know, a page turner, a mystery, and solve all the intricacies of plot that are inherent in mystery, it would be good training. So I set out to write a mystery, and the book is kind of a father-son story in a lot of ways. It was a way to explore the father-son relationship in the form of a cop story.
Mm-hmm. How did you sell it?
How did I sell it?
Yeah.
I got an agent from a friend of mine who's a novelist. He introduced me to his agent, and she liked the manuscript and took it on, and she sold it for me. Took a couple of months.
St. Martin's?
Yeah, St. Martin's.
And they must have liked it a lot because they commissioned a Little Saigon.
Yeah, apparently so. They published Laguna Heat well. It was well received, and St. Martin's was behind it, and they were eager to go on Little Saigon.
And you had a movie option for that book.
For Laguna Heat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was HBO turned that into a made-for-TV picture, you know, home box office picture. And that aired last November 87, it showed. And it's actually available in video now, if you're ever curious.
How was it?
Pretty good. Not as good as the novel, but...
Of course not.
Every writer says that.
No, I don't get HBO, so that's when I miss. I get Showtime, but I don't mm-hmm. get HBO, but... almost every writer I've talked to complains in some form or another about the film version. Although once in a while, some of them come across very well.
Mm-hmm. It's rare when you really get it as good as the novel, I think. The forms are a lot different than most people would think. A good book just doesn't automatically mean a good movie. They did a good job with Laguna Heat, though. They kept some of the high emotional moments between the cop and his dad. They had some of the more... you know, the more touching scenes they kept in there. What failed in the movie, I think, was the detective yarn itself, the basic thrill of solving a crime, which the book does fairly well. And as such, it wasn't quite as thrilling a picture as it should have been, I think.
Well, the success of Laguna Heat changed your life. You became a full-time writer.
It did.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
It was published the same month that the Sergeant York project was canceled, so I was bounced out of Ford Aerospace and onto my own as a novelist all in the same month, 1985.
That makes such a big change in your life. I think people react to you differently, don't they? When, hey, this guy sold a book.
Yeah, there is kind of a change. You know, a lot of my friends figured they don't know why Parker isn't showing up for the parties every weekend, and I told them, well, I'm working on a book. And I don't think some people really believe you until you've actually got something to show for yourself. So people did look at me differently. They were happy. My family was kind of in it with me. They knew what was going on, and my closer friends knew I'd been struggling with this book for, well, 5 years. And so they were thrilled when the book finally came out.
Yeah, I have a feeling that people often don't take writers seriously. I've been working on a couple of books and a number of years ago. I would be sitting in our dining L in a small Manhattan apartment. And I'd be setting up this manual typewriter, trying to shield myself from the noise of the television set and the kid running around and all of that.
Torture.
And so my young son would often come up and start harassing me as I'm working. And my wife would say, "Now, David, leave Daddy alone while he's typing." And I say, "Damn it, I'm writing. I'm not typing.
Yeah,
I'm
there
writing.
Is a difference."
No, but to them, saw some guy sitting behind a typewriter, and he's to them typing. It was typing. Mm-hmm. They didn't conceive that this would one day turn out to be a book.
Yeah, it's like there's no connection or something. Yeah. It's some busy work or something you do because you like to exercise your fingers.
Yeah, so this is the 5 years you were working on this book. I have a feeling your friends were saying, "Well, Jeff, he's typing."
Yeah, typing. Yeah, he's home typing.
Exercising his fingers, as you say. Well, now this brings us up to a little Saigon. How did this book come about?
You know, the book, Don, was actually brought on by a single incident that took place in a Costa Mesa liquor store near where I live. It was fall of 85, and I was waiting for Laguna Heat to come out. I walked into this liquor store in Costa Mesa, and the guy in line in front of me was an American Vietnam War vet, and the woman working behind the counter was a Vietnamese woman clerk. And I thought, this is interesting. You know, what is this man who has fought in this woman's country thinking right now as he approaches to buy whatever he's going to buy? You know, conversely, what's she thinking? What's going through her mind right now? By some great stretch of the imagination, could their paths actually have crossed in Vietnam at one time? You know, maybe they saw each other, knew each other, who knows? And he stepped up and he was about to place his order with her, and she put a pack of Lucky Strike cigarettes on the counter in front of him before he said anything. And he was as shocked as I was, and he said, "How'd you know that's what I wanted?" And she said, "Some things you just know." And he paid and smiled and walked out. And that moment floored me. You know, the questions that went on in my head after that were many, and I figured that I would have to go into this Vietnamese community where I live and find out a little bit about it.
Well, how did you do it? Did you have an entree?
Well, you know, no. I started with the cops. I think it's a good place to start for research. Again, newspaper experience coming in handy. Called the cops, rode along with the officers in the Little Saigon area. Just so your listeners know, Little Saigon is a formally designated place in Orange County, California, just south of L.A., where there are approximately 100,000 Southeast Asian refugees. 80,000 of them are Vietnamese. That's Little Saigon of the novel. Anyhow, rode along in Little Saigon with the police, went into the bars and the cabarets and the nightclubs and met people, just kind of confronted them with what I was doing. Ask questions, and contrary to what I thought I would find, the basic Vietnamese men and women on the street were very open and talkative to me. So my entree in the community was not paved in any way, but it was fairly easy. I found the people open and willing to talk about a great number of things, which was a real pleasant surprise.
Did you make friends?
I did. I actually made friends, many acquaintances and several friends. I was married last month, and several of my
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm proud to say some Vietnamese friends came to my wedding reception. So I did make some friends.
Well, tell me about your character Fry. The thing that impressed me in reading Little Saigon was that you've given your hero a great amount of depth, a very complicated character in many respects, and I like the relationship or the non-relationship that he has with his family. And his, he seems to be an outcast, and his plaintive appeal, "Dad, I want back in. I want back into the family," because somehow he is an outcast. Tell me how you drew this portrait.
Chuck, the hero of the book, is a compilation of people to me. He's part myself. He is part friends I have. And he's also, I tried to make him emblematic of my generation, the generation of young Americans who did not participate in the war. I think there's a big difference between us and the young men who did, even if that age difference is only 5 years, say. So I tried to make Chuck emblematic of my generation and based him a little bit on myself and the people that I know.
But it goes further than that. Tell me a little bit about his character, what kind of person he is.
Well, you know, his question with his family, how he fits in or doesn't fit in with his family, his father in particular, is a subject that my first book, Laguna Heat, deals with too. It's a father-son story, and as is Little Saigon. And I think that in in many young men, and certainly in myself, there is always a question as you're growing up, you know, how do I fit into this unit called the family? You know, what is my changing relationship with mom and dad? It changes from year to year. How do you fit in? What are your duties and responsibilities? What should you expect and what shouldn't you? And just the whole question of a father and son relationship and how you fit into it. That's dear to me. I've started in on a third book, and one of the things I decided not to do was write a story about a father and a son, because I've done that twice before. I'm 150 pages in, and I've got another father-son story going. So it's dear to my heart in some way. My father is a very strong man, very potent father figure. So I have a lot to react to in him. He's a very strong character. So I think that has imprinted itself on my psyche, certainly.
How is Chuck different from his older brother and indeed the rest of the family?
I think the main difference for Chuck is that Chuck adamantly refuses to follow the family line. He comes from a long line of successful real estate developers, a powerful family, a successful, strong, ambitious family, and he purposefully refuses to follow in those footsteps. He hears a different drummer, if you will. He enjoys surfing. He has a surf shop. He tries his hand at being a newspaper reporter without too much success. Almost as strongly as his father, Edison, tries to push him in one direction, Chuck automatically goes in the other. And I think every son can appreciate that desire inside to tweak the system.
And yet, Chuck wants back in.
He does. He wants back in. He wants the love and the acceptance and the feeling of being part of a team on his own terms without having to buy into the family business, if you will. It's a fine line.
Yeah, but that will never completely happen, will it?
Total acceptance for him?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think it would, Don. You know, I would like to think that Edison at the end of the book has recognized Chuck's value and realized that Chuck is a black sheep and he'll never be the straight shooter that his older brother was, but that he'll get that kind of unconditional forgiving love that a father can give a son. So I'm optimistic.
The thriller aspect of Little Saigon. Tell me a little bit about this. The way life is in Little Saigon in terms of the intrigue, the violence.
You know, the Little Saigon, as you say, first and foremost, is a thriller. It's built to be a suspense novel and a page-turner and a novel of excitement. The actual Little Saigon that it is based on is obviously a somewhat quieter place than is portrayed in the novel, although the political currents that run through the novel do run through the community. It's a politically very volatile place. The wrong words or the wrong attitudes toward Hanoi can and do get people shot in Little Saigon. It's happened several times and probably will continue to happen. It's a very volatile place, and that volatility, I think, runs through the novel. It's one of the things that attracted me to the community was the sense of one scene's in the book. A Vietnamese person says, you have to realize in Little Saigon there's always a sense that something is going to happen. And that is a true sense, I think. So the thriller is based on very, very actual currents and events that have happened in that community.
Well, in a couple of weeks, the tour will be over. You'll be back in Orange County. Where you live in Orange County, by the way?
I live in Laguna Beach.
Laguna Beach, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be back in Laguna Beach, sitting at your word processor. How are you going to organize your day to complete this new book?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a schedule fascist, Don. I like my schedule and I try to stick to it. I get up 7:30 or 8 and I hit the word processor and I don't answer the phone or do anything until 1 or 2 o'clock when I'm done with my work. I can write generally 4 or 5, 6 hours. And after that, I just, you know, go about my day-to-day stuff. I have a lot of research to do for the new one. And I'll tell you, I'm eager to get back to it. You know, I've been away on tour and on honeymoon and doing fun, wonderful things, but I miss the word processor. It's a nice place for me to be because I enjoy writing a lot.
Probably have to work in a little surfing too, don't you?
Well, yeah, I might do that.
Little Saigon by T. Jefferson Parker, a real bang-up book, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Don.